Hey everyone, it's Maria Hinojosa, and thanks so much for listening to Latino USA. So, how about a reward for listening to the news all week? You know, something that might make you smile. Well, check out Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, which is the NPR News Quiz. It's just like NPR with a lot more jokes and a lot fewer facts. The Wait, Wait podcast has all the fun that nearly everyone else at NPR is avoiding. Check it out at npr.org/podcasts. From NPR and the Futuro Media Group, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa, and today we talk por el teléfono.
Hello, contestame el teléfono.
To begin, how phones redefine the digital divide.
I use a computer most of the times.
Like at home?
I use my phone.
Use your phone to write your paper?
Yes.
To write your paper?
Is that annoying?
Sometimes, because sometimes I flip and then I gotta flip it back to read the whole thing.
Young Latinos are tech savvy, but do they really have access to the tools they need? And we talked to psychologists using mobile tech to reach Latinos who might not seek therapy otherwise.
Many Latinos feel very uncomfortable going to psychologists. No estoy loco, right? I'm not crazy, right?
All this and more coming up on Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. No se vayan. Welcome to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. So here at our office at the Futuro Media Group, we have this joke that our producer, Antonia Cerejido, is our resident millennial.
I mean, I hate the term millennial.
But, you know, she is a millennial because she's young. So one thing that we think of as defining millennials, younger people, is their attachment to their phones.
I mean, I'm not like... I am on my phone a lot.
Statistically, though, we should assume that she is. 72% of Latinos over 18 own smartphones, almost 10% more than the national average. And they're growing up on them. The average age that Latinos start using cell phones is 12. Here's Wilcaudi Maynard, a 13-year-old at PS 161, a middle school in Harlem.
How important is your phone to you? Like, if you lost it, what would happen?
I would die.
You would die?
Oh my God, that's so... I hate to say it, that's kind of the way I feel too.
Wow.
Now, first, I'll try to use the Find Your Phone app on the thingy. I go on my computer and I can't find it, I just buy a new one.
You just buy a new one?
Yeah.
Or you could easily cancel your T-Mobile.
I went up to PS 161 to hang out with these kids, and let me tell you, their phone game was on a different level. They were using apps I'd never heard of.
Mainly use Kick and Facebook.
What's Kick?
Yeah. Kick is like a little messenger that you're able to talk to your friends.
Show me. How do you use it?
To text like my girl and my friends.
I mean, it's really clear that this is how these kids communicate, and they get a lot of love from their friends online.
And I get a lot of comments, too.
Like what?
Heart emojis.
From his boo.
You also get heart emojis?
Sometimes.
I asked Pedro Gonzalez, nickname Swaggy P, how many followers he has on Instagram.
I don't got that much.
That's a ton of followers. How many is it? Say it. How many followers is that?
1,118.
Nice.
I'm sorry. How old is this kid?
He's 14.
And he's got 1,118 followers?
Yeah. I have less than half of that. I mean, and you, who are like a public figure, have more, but like not a ton.
No. My Instagram is growing, but slowly, which is an interesting thing for me because I think it's very young.
How many likes on average do you get on an Instagram post or a Facebook post?
A lot.
Like how many?
My highest was like 150.
150?
Yeah, in Instagram.
Okay. What about like if you put something up on Facebook, how many likes are you gonna get?
2030.
Okay.
I don't know.
I'm gonna be posting stuff on Facebook like that.
For the students at PS 161, the number of followers they have and the phones themselves are status symbols.
What kind of phone is that?
I got an iPhone 5.
iPhone 5C.
And 4S.
God, I feel for her. Middle school boys really don't let up. They're making fun of her for having a 4S, which is an older model iPhone, but it's still not that old.
So does everyone have an iPhone, or what's the deal with that?
I guess iPhone is the new, like, good phone around.
Back in the 90s, the term the digital divide became very popular.
A digital divide that exists in this country.
It widens the state of our region's digital divide and resources.
And that's the digital divide.
The internet and communication technology in general was gaining some serious momentum, but faster in some parts of the country than others. Areas like the Bible Belt didn't get as much access when compared to big cities like New York or San Francisco. But when it came to the actual divide, there was a lot of emphasis put on the role of the home computer.
Every child deserves a computer, but not every family can afford one.
I asked the middle schoolers at PS 161 about what they have at home.
All of you have smartphones. Do you have a computer at home?
No.
Okay.
I'm the only one with a computer.
What?
I'm the only one with a computer.
Do you use it?
Yes.
What do you use it for?
I use it a lot for gaming.
It's true that many Latino households still don't have computers. But unlike the 90s, today a lot of people access the web through their phone. So it's not that these kids don't have access to digital technology, like the term the digital divide would imply. But they are limited in some ways.
Okay, what about for like writing papers? Like what do you use?
I use a computer most of the times.
Like at home?
Yeah. I use my phone.
You use your phone to write your papers?
Yes.
To write your papers?
Is that annoying?
Sometimes, because I just gotta, sometimes I flip and then I gotta flip it back to read the whole thing.
Oh my God. That's amazing. They're writing their papers on their phones?
I know. I couldn't believe it. One thing is an essay, you know? A whole nother thing is, like, if they're applying to colleges or if they're applying for a job, it really limits the kinds of things that they can do with technology. Their teacher, Kyle Goodstadt, is quick to tell me that the school is making changes to make technology more accessible to students.
We just got a $1 million grant from Apple. So next year, we're going to have iPads in all the classrooms. And so we're trying to, like, get the kids using technology so that that's going to become a thing that's just super easy.
So, you know this.
That's crazy. So how next year they get iPads and all that, but we...
Miguel Paulino, who you just heard, is giving his teacher a hard time because he's graduating. But his frustration is kind of justified. Miguel and his classmates could have really benefited from an iPad. It's not like he doesn't know how to use one. I mean, it's just like a big, giant iPhone. Last year, Nielsen released a study that called Latinos, quote, the trendsetters when it comes to digital device ownership and online usage. Basically, Latinos are adopting new technologies, like smartphones, like tablets, at a quicker rate than other groups. And so maybe the divide actually has more to do with how some systems, like schools, aren't keeping up with them. It's not just middle school kids using social media on their phones. It's entire families.
Well, my aunt, she uses Facebook, but I feel weird about that.
Yeah.
Like her just randomly texting me, like, that's just too weird.
Well, like, what did she text you?
Oh, do you have a girlfriend? Oh, have you ever kissed her? Oh, blah, blah, blah. And, like, that'll make me feel OD weird, because I don't know, like, if I should tell her that kind, like, those stuff about me.
There is a clear economic reason why Latino families might choose to buy smartphones over a computer.
Certainly, if we start to think about the fact that Latinos, as a socioeconomic or demographic group, tend to have less capital.
This is Sara Inés Calderón. She's a programmer and is developing an app called Electa that aims to make voting easier for Latinos. We'll get more into that later in the show.
Latinos also tend to be bigger in terms of the number of people in that household.
Then it might not be worth it to buy a computer and hook it up to the internet when only one person can use it at a time.
Two parents and two kids, maybe sharing a computer isn't that big of a deal. But if you have more than two kids and they all have homework to do, that's not necessarily the most economic way to invest your money.
Now mobile phone companies like Sprint and Verizon offer cheap family plans.
You can have one bill, everybody can have a phone, and everybody can use the internet.
And mobile companies are very aware of this. I mean, if you search Verizon Family Plan on YouTube, this is the first ad that pops up.
Nosotros no vamos a dejar a Verizon salirse con la suya. Nos cambiamos a Sprint.
En Sprint te damos el doble de datos de alta velocidad que Verizon Wireless, AT&T y T-Mobile.
But there's also an emotional reason for why having high-end and advanced phones is important to the Latino community. Will Cowrie, who we heard from at the top of the show, tells me about how her mom uses her phone.
They've been talking to my family in DR because a lot of things be happening, like people are dying in DR from our family. And yeah, they be texting them to ask if they okay and all that.
Good. And so does your mom talk to them like every day?
When she comes from work, she be calling them and texting them.
Many Latinos are immigrants and need a way to stay connected with those abroad.
Which is really interesting because, you know, for me, in my family, the lifeline to my family back in Mexico, because we were the first ones of all of our family from Mexico, so was our phone, that, you know, the green phone on the wall with the long cord so mom could be talking while she was, you know, cooking and making dinner, etc. It was our lifeline back to Mexico.
Right.
So in our lives right now, phones and technology in general might be thought of as neutral, certainly not as political things. But the issue of access actually can have profound implications. Phones today, in particular smartphones, can do way more than make phone calls, right? You can track your diet, you can deposit a check, you can find your son, you can even learn a new language on your phone. Now, Antonia is going to take us through a tour of that little device that's probably in your hand right now. You know it, or in your pocket, or you're looking for it. And Antonia is going to show us how phones are shaping the lives of Latinos.
Wait. But before we get into it, do you remember when you had your first phone?
So I'm trying to think about this, Antonia, and I actually remember the first time I went out on assignment with a cell phone. And that was, it must have been like 93-ish, maybe. NPR, there was a breaking news story, and they sent me out with, you know, we had one cell phone for the entire New York Bureau of NPR. It weighed like 25 pounds. It was huge, you know, like in the thickest part of it. It was actually, it was like an inch or maybe an inch and a half thick, like where the battery stuck out. but I was so cool. I had a phone.
Learning about people as cool as Maria when we come back.
Coming up on Latino USA, how mobile technology is changing the game for healthcare.
With technology, what you can do is you can reach people even in places where there are no services for them.
Stay with us. No se vayan.
Caníbales con disfraces finos y elegantes llegan a la fiesta. Caminando por la calle, vienen de una forma, llegan a la puerta. Dejan problemas de lado, la escuela, el trabajo, estamos de fiesta. Todas las manos arriba, los ojos encima. ¿Dónde está mi
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Inada, maker of the Dreamwave massage chair, Japanese crafted with shiatsu point detection and 16 pre-programmed massages, including morning, night, and full body sessions. Learn more at dreamwavechair.com. And the May Family Foundation, supporting Fountain House, committed to providing opportunities for people with mental illness to live, work, and learn through a community of mutual support. More information is available at fountainhouse.org.
Hola, mis queridos listeners. I have a couple of favors to ask of you. First of all, if you listen to us on iTunes, please, please, please take a couple of minutes and rate and review our show. This really, really helps us, and it'll take you just a few seconds. And if you really love what we do here, and we know you do, please head over to latinousa.org and click on the donate button. Even just 10 bucks from everyone who listens to us would make a huge difference in helping us make the radio we love for all of you. Muchísimas gracias, and hit that donate button. Welcome back to Latino USA, and today we're talking about el teléfono. And when you talk about phones today, you know you're not just talking about phone calls or even texts. One in three cell phone owners has used their phone to look up health information, which means things like, you know, downloading an app like MyFitnessPal to track your diet, looking up questions on WebMD, or using them for exercise the way I do. Some groups, like Latinos and African Americans, are actually more likely to look up health information on their phones than other people. Producer Antonia Cerejido brings us a story now about two psychologists in San Francisco. They're taking advantage of new mobile technology in an effort to do something big: improve the health of Latinos.
Clinical psychologist Dr. Ricardo Munoz grew up in one of the Latino strongholds of the U.S., the Mission District in San Francisco. Not unlike a very popular Latino icon, Carlos Santana.
His father came to San Francisco from Mexico in 1960. My father came in 1960 also. We lived on 14th Street. They lived on 14th Street. He went to Mission High School. I went to Mission Dolores School, which is just two blocks from Mission High School.
You really are the Santana of health. But actually, you could call him the Santana of health. Santana was a pioneer of music, and Dr. Munoz is a pioneer in psychology. He found a new way to reach out to his patients, through the web. But growing up, Dr. Munoz did not want to be a rock star psychologist.
When I was a child, my nickname was El Cura, which means the priest. I actually did want to become a priest. I almost became a priest when I was 10, 13, and 18. And by the time I got to be 18, I had a lot of doubts about Catholic dogma, and so I really didn't feel I could become a priest because I couldn't teach people something that I wasn't sure about myself.
In college, he took his first introductory course in psychology.
I fell in love with it because psychology is dedicated to doing what I wanted to do as a priest, which is to help people lead good lives.
In 1985, Dr. Munoz began a clinic that offered therapy. They dealt with things like depression and helping people quit smoking, both in English and in Spanish. But
it was very hard to get Spanish-speaking smokers to come.
One possible reason:
many Latinos have more than one job, or they are taking care of their kids and don't have anybody else who can take care of them.
And there was another barrier, a cultural one.
Many Latinos feel very uncomfortable going to psychologists. No estoy loco, right? I'm not crazy, right?
So Dr. Munoz decided if people weren't going to come to him, he would go to them, or at least send the material through the mail.
And we did the study, and we found that, in fact, sending a smoking cessation guide in Spanish helped about 10% of people quit smoking.
In other words, it worked. The study worked as well, or even a bit better, than the nicotine patch.
That was amazing.
But there was a catch. The price.
It cost to create these brochures, you know, very nicely printed and colored brochures.
And this limited how many people they could reach. And so Dr. Munoz got to thinking.
This is 1997, and the web had begun about 6 years before. And it occurred to me that if we could do this via the web, we could reach a lot more people.
And thus, stopsmoking.ucsf.edu was born, a free smoking cessation site that can be found in English and in Spanish.
First thinking that we were going to help people in the San Francisco Bay Area, but then people started coming from throughout California and throughout the country and then throughout the world. It was just so surprising that through the web, we could reach so many people. Now, of course, that this is not surprising at all. But back in the 1990s, it was.
Dr. Munoz kept putting materials online.
We set up a website that not just for the smoking stuff, but other things. And we put up the manuals we had been developing. And a few years ago, I went to a conference in Lima. Some psychologist came up to me and said, Dr. Munoz, would you mind coming with us? We want to show you something.
They took him to what's called un pueblo joven.
In English, it would mean like a young town, right? I guess it'd be called like a shanty town. It's a very poor, poor community.
In the town, they had a health center that had been established by Jesuits.
And in that health center, there was one room for mental health. And in that room, they were running a depression group using the manuals we had developed here at San Francisco General Hospital. And I can tell you, that's one of the highest points I had. With technology, what you can do is you can reach people even in places where there are no services for them. Let's say that you are a smoker, a Spanish-speaking smoker in, I don't know, Wyoming or, you know, someplace where there are not a lot of Latinos, and certainly no Latino psychologists or smoking cessation counselors. You could get on the internet and reach our Spanish-speaking smoking cessation site anywhere.
But some people doubted that online mental health treatment could be effective for a demographic like Latinos.
Back in the 1990s, when I began doing this work, there was the big issue of the digital divide. And sometimes we would get criticized by other Latinos that here we were doing stuff on technology and that was not really appropriate.
But Dr. Munoz takes issue with this idea. He's a really big fan of this book called Mountains Beyond Mountains by Tracy Kidder. And the book is about a true story of a doctor named Paul Farmer who became obsessed with bringing healthcare to Haiti. And there's this part in the book where Farmer and a local priest are talking about technology.
But Paul Farmer asks, are they appropriate technology? And he had picked up the term in a class at Harvard, which meant that one should use only the simplest technology required to do a job. So what does the priest say? The priest says the following. Do you know what appropriate technology means? It means good things for rich people and shit for the poor.
Dr. Munoz can relate to the priest.
That was the kind of response I was getting early on.
He never saw technology in and of itself as an obstacle.
And now I'm finding out that Latinos actually are way ahead of other ethnic groups in the U.S. in terms of smartphones.
When Dr. Munoz was developing his smoking cessation site, this data about Latinos and their connection to their phones wasn't available. But fast forward 20 years, and Dr. Adrian Aguilera, who is actually a mentee of Dr. Munoz, is well aware that a good way to reach his patients is through their phone, specifically through text.
So on a daily basis, people get a mood question, which I mentioned is, what is your mood right now on a scale of 1 through 9? Respond with a number and what you're doing or thinking right now.
Dr. Adrian Aguilera focuses on depression, and he reaches out to his patients all throughout the week using an automated text messaging system. It sends texts like,
Were you able to notice your negative, unhelpful thoughts this week? Can you think of any thoughts that improved your mood today? Take time to focus on the present. The past is left behind and the future is for later.
It helps patients do something psychologists have nicknamed homework.
When people show up to the treatment, they end up often not completing the homework, which we call it, maybe because we're calling it homework.
Homework, for people in depression treatment, means keeping track of how you're feeling. So figuring out how you feel on a scale of 1 to 9 and noticing what sorts of behaviors are triggering what feelings. So are you happier when you go for a run? Are you sad when you're about to go to sleep?
Instead of asking people to fill out a piece of paper with their mood throughout the week and maybe, you know, how many healthy activities they did each day, we're doing this via text messaging.
Dr. Aguilera then charts this information and shows it to his patients during session.
Within that data, we can start to identify maybe some low points or some high points and make those teaching moments.
There's another purpose, to offer motivation and support to his patients.
They're mostly made to help people try to think about these issues that we're talking about in therapy. And I often talk about how we're in, you know, the therapy sessions for an hour and a half every week, but there are many more hours throughout the week. And the goal is to try to continue practicing those skills that we talk about throughout the week.
I spoke to one of Dr. Aguilera's patients, Sergio Gutierrez.
Okay, Antonio, estoy listo.
¿Ahora sí me escuchas mejor?
He's from Cucho, Peru, but has been living in San Francisco for 15 years.
Estoy viviendo por 15 años en San Francisco. Me gusta mucho la ciudad, a pesar que es muy cara.
He says he likes San Francisco, even though it's very expensive. He works at a Chevron gas station part-time.
Básicamente trabajo un part-time en una gasolinera, en una Chevron.
And as a house cleaner for a big house the rest of the week.
Y los otros días trabajo como house cleaner en una casa grande ya desde hace 15 años.
So, I have to admit, I was surprised by Sergio. I know that all depressed people aren't gray, gloomy clouds all the time, but Sergio seemed kind of like the complete opposite of what you would expect a depressed person to be. I ask why he's so happy.
Estoy contento porque ¿cuántos cumpleaños tienes tú?
He replies with a question. How many birthdays a year do you have? And like all people, I have one. Sergio says,
yo tengo tres.
He has three.
Tuve un accidente y volví a nacer.
He says he went through an accident, and according to him, he was reborn.
Me operaron del corazón y volví a nacer, y el día que nací son tres.
Later, he went through an open heart surgery and again was reborn. Plus his actual birthday, that makes three.
Y todavía estamos vivos.
And he's still alive. He says when he has needed depression treatment, it was because he was about to hit rock bottom.
Cuando yo he ido con el doctor Aguilera era porque ya está a punto de tocar piso.
For example, after his heart surgery, he was having a hard time finding motivation.
Iba cayendo en depresión, iba cayendo en depresión.
He began going to a clinical depression group led by Dr. Aguilera. And Dr. Aguilera suggested that Sergio get a cell phone.
No me gusta por esto, por este otro. No porque no lo pueda pagar, sino porque me interrumpe, me están llamando.
He said he didn't want one. He said he had the money. But he didn't like how it would interrupt his daily life. And if he ever were to be in a relationship, his partner could use it to control him.
Y si tienes alguna pareja como que te está controlando y no me gusta mucho eso, le dije.
Dr. Aguilera told him that a phone could help him.
Le digo, pero eso te ayuda para esto, para este otro, este, el otro. Y
Sergio said he'd try to get one the next week.
Y ya, bueno, ya voy a ver si la otra semana trato de tener un teléfono.
Now he receives text messages from Dr. Aguilera's group, but he has some issues with them.
Los mensajes de texto me ayudan, pero como le dije al Dr. Aguilera, tienen que ser, aparte motivadores que lo son, no repetitivos.
He says they are motivating, but sometimes a little repetitive. He does acknowledge, though, that he gets excited when he receives them.
Entonces, el solo hecho que te llamen para decirte es, aunque sea una cosa automatizada, es que alguien está pensando en ti.
It makes him feel like someone out there cares about him, even if the texts are programmed by some computer somewhere. Experiences like this highlight another cultural difference. Dr. Aguilera and Dr. Munoz actually found that Spanish speakers and English speakers who received the text felt differently about them. Spanish speakers said the text made them feel supported, while English speakers said the text made them feel more introspective. In general, more healthcare providers are embracing technology.
I think in the kind of on the front lines, I don't know if we're quite there, but there has been a big move towards incorporating technology in a lot of interventions.
Dr. Aguilera tells me there's a movement away from so-called self-reporting. So things like entering what you had for lunch in a diet app, towards something called passive sensing. For example, Northwestern University is developing this app called Mobilize.
It's a combination of active and passive sensing in that it would ask you similarly kind of what your mood was, but it would detect where you were geographically. So then it could start to predict when you might be feeling down or up based on where you were.
To me, this is crazy. I mean, this app could predict your mood based on where you are using the GPS data that's in your phone. Obviously, some people are spooked by the amount of personal data that can be collected through apps like these.
It's scary and exciting. I realize that. I think for those of us in the field, I think it's mostly exciting. But I guess the way I see it is, you know, the Googles of the world, the Facebooks of the world are already doing this to try to sell us things. And I see our work as trying to take some of this similar data, but trying to help people be more healthy.
Dr. Aguilera worries about something else. He sees the development of fancy health tech stuff like Fitbit and Nike Fuel watches.
And that's great, but those types of technologies are in the hands of those who are most well off. And I think in order for these interventions to truly reduce costs and have a wide public health impact, they need to be targeted towards people from lower income backgrounds and people that have the highest burden of health disease and health problems.
It's not that Latinos can't handle this fancy technology. It's that sometimes they can't afford it. This question of access is what inspired both Dr. Aguilera and Dr. Munoz to get involved with technology to begin with. All of Dr. Munoz's programs and materials are still available online, and they're completely free. The Santana of Health has no plans to slow down anytime soon.
I think what drives me is that I realize that even through the web, we're just reaching a very small proportion of people. Every time I see a patient, that hour I spend with the patient is gone forever. It'll never help anyone else. It's consumable. It's used up. But through the internet, the sites I create can be used again and again and again by people all over the world, anytime it's convenient for them, anywhere.
He's not saying we need to get rid of face-to-face interventions.
There should be a therapist, a physician, a healthcare provider for every person in the world who needs it. But until we do that, I think we need to develop other kinds of interventions like digital interventions, web apps, internet sites, etc.
Coming up on Latino USA, sending messages and money across the border.
They have to literally pick up the phone and call you, hey, I received the money. Thank you. And that rarely happens.
One man building a solution to a tired old problem. Stay with us. No se vayan. We'll be right back. Hey, everyone. It's Maria Hinojosa, and thanks so much for listening to Latino USA. So how about a reward for listening to the news all week? You know, something that might make you smile. Well, check out Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, which is the NPR News Quiz. It's just like NPR with a lot more jokes and a lot fewer facts. The Wait, Wait podcast has all the fun that nearly everyone else at NPR is avoiding. Check it out at npr.org/podcasts.
Aprovechate de mí, de que estoy enamorado. Aprovechate que al fin te encontraste con un hombre así. Puedes hacer lo que quieras por mi mundo de cabeza, pero si te aprovechas tú de mí, me aprovecharé de ti.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Lumber Liquidators, a proud sponsor of NPR, offering more than 400 styles, including hardwood, bamboo, laminate, and vinyl, with flooring specialists in hundreds of stores nationwide. More at lumberliquidators.com or 1-800-HARDWOOD. And the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, helping people build measurably better lives, supporting efforts to improve women's economic opportunities around the world. More information is available at hewlett.org.
Welcome back to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
I know in a way this will sound like it's out of place, out of time. For somebody living in the United States, it's kind of hard to understand.
A few weeks ago, mis queridos listeners, we reached out to you on Twitter, and we asked if technology has improved the way you communicate with your loved ones abroad. We heard back from lots of you, including David Colunga from Houston.
Technologies that are commonly used by everyone in the United States in a certain time, you know, those were technologies that in Mexico they were just, you know, starting to develop. There was very little access.
David grew up with his mother in Mexico while his father worked in the United States. In the 1980s, there wasn't much phone or internet access, so there was really only one way to get in touch with someone.
When I was a kid, my mom and dad, they communicated through letters. They would send letters every week. So all the information each other knew about what was going on. You know, my dad, he knew what was going on with us children, and my mom knew what he had going on here in the States. Was a week off, so she would get news of last week, this week.
But David's tiny town in the state of Tamaulipas did have some phone access.
They had several phones, and people from the United States would call this caseta to talk to their loved ones on the phone.
Of course, it's the 21st century now, and there's greater communication access everywhere in the world. Families video chat through Skype. They message each other through free services like WhatsApp and Facebook Messenger. And, you know, it's easier to stay in touch with people across borders more now than it's ever been. But David Colunga isn't sure that's necessarily a good thing.
There is a downside, though. A lot of my friends have been, you know, the same friends that I had when I left Mexico. And I think sometimes, you know, this super easy and fast way to, you know, keep track and stay in touch with the friends you have, it would hinder your ability, or sometimes just your time, you know, to develop and get new friendships and new relationships and all that, you know.
Of course, the fact is that it's easier to send messages across the border, and now it's easier to send money too. Our producer, Antonia Cerejido, is back to tell us more.
Remittances is a huge industry. Remittances to the developing world
It's a $410 billion industry, right?
When we're talking about remittances, what we mean is when an individual from an immigrant community sends money back to his or her country of origin. So, for instance, if you're a Mexican immigrant and you're sending money back to your family for things like utilities or groceries, you're sending remittances. And the remittances industry is actually almost the size of the global airline industry.
From the U.S., Latin America receives $60 billion. Just from the U.S. and just Latin America. So it's a humongous industry. It's huge.
Edricio de la Cruz should know. He's trying to make money from remittances. Fees for most remittance companies are crazy big. They're taking between 5 and 10%, which may not sound like a lot. But if you're sending money abroad every month, it adds up.
And the other facet is the one of control and just transparency. You don't know when the money gets there.
What Edricio means is that you have no way of knowing that your money got into the right hands safely.
They have to literally pick up the phone and call you, hey, I received the money. Yeah. Thank you. And that rarely happens.
And of course, if the money does get there, you have no idea how the people on the other side are actually going to spend it.
Exactly. I mean, you send money to somebody and you don't know what they're going to do with it, if they're going to gamble it away or drink it away or use it for something else other than what you intended it to.
This is a very real problem. People might misuse it or ask for more money than they really need. You really have no way of knowing. So Edricio did what any natural entrepreneur would do when confronted with a problem. He turned the solution into a business.
We play here every single day. This is addicting. Ping pong is amazing, and I'm probably the worst player.
Edricio's startup, Regali, is located in Washington Heights in northern Manhattan. And Regali is a play on regalo, the Spanish word for gift, but with two eyes. With traditional companies like MoneyGram or Western Union, you just send money from one side to the other, but you can't really control what the money goes toward. The idea behind Regali is that you don't actually have to send money to an individual person. You can actually pay their bills directly to the utility companies from anywhere. One of our other producers, Michael Simon Johnson, talked to Edricio about this.
This is kind of your dashboard. This is my cousin, so I'll pay her cable. Mm-hmm. This is when the next one is due.
Is that the name of the utility?
Like, yeah, exactly.
That's the utility company?
Yeah. This is electricity.
Uh-huh. And these are her bills?
This is my cousin. This is my aunt.
Okay. Oh, so we're looking at multiple people.
Yeah, you can have multiple people. And they get a text message saying, hey, your bill was paid. Thanks for your regalo.
Dígame. ¿Cuánto vas a mandar? Porque ya estoy bajo de crédito.
Daisy Paulino runs a store called GWB around the corner from Regali's office. And GWB offers all kinds of cross-border services, things like prepaid phone cards. People come in all the time to send money abroad. Some of them come in to use Regali.
It could be 3 times a day, 4 times. It could be more than that. It depends on the day that the bill is due in Dominican Republic.
Anyone can use the website themselves. But if you don't have access to a computer, or you don't know how to navigate the internet on your phone, or if you don't even have a credit card, you can come to one of these places, like Daisy's GWB, and pay for your cousin's phone bill in cash.
Is there any trouble convincing people, like, no, you are actually paying the bill?
With us, no, because I've been here for a long time, and, you know, I know everybody around the neighborhood, and everybody trusts, you know, my company.
So basically, like, community trust is what...
Mm-hmm. And the company is growing. Through his service, users have paid close to $2 million in bill payments in the DR alone.
His definition of technology is just a good technology is that doing things better. That's it, doing things better and easier, whatever it is you got to do.
Edricio's company is small, and he says he feels a sense of isolation, considering how few Latinos there are in the tech world.
There's 4 times more female founders than Hispanic founders. And people say that, you know, women in tech is low. Yeah, it is low, but still a lot bigger than Hispanics.
Right.
Just regardless of gender, so. Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
A lot of Latinos are new to this country. They're 1-2 generations in, so you've already taken one big risk, right? One big leap. So you're somewhat reserved to take that next leap. And that reservation sticks with you 1 or 2 generations, typically, until you're stable. I think the other aspects, honestly, is just is precedence or the ecosystem. They don't have an ecosystem that supports them.
Getting Latinos working in the tech sector has to start with Latinos feeling an ownership of technology that they use or don't use. That's not always easy within a Latino cultural context. David Kalunga, who told us about how his parents communicated through letters, explained why he never used technology to send money across borders, even though it would be easier.
I guess the main reason is the power of habit. I just never developed a habit to using the internet for that. I was raised, you know, in a cash economy, and I think a lot of people from Mexico also, you know, you tend to rely a lot on cash. Banking, unfortunately, in Mexico, it's kind of expensive. The other reason, it's just the general mistrust on the internet. It's funny. My mom, like even now, like when my cousins or my aunts share pictures of babies or of news or, you know, important things, my mom would be like, tell them that they don't need to be sharing that stuff on the internet. And, you know, of course she wants to look at the pictures, but she's always giving us the lecture afterwards. That's, I would say, another reason. But the main one, like I said, it's the power of habit. You know, I just learned to do it that way. And then when I got into smartphones and the internet and everything, I just never considered using them for that purpose.
But companies like Regali are interrupters of habit and are introducing a lot of Latinos to new ideas, like sending remittances online. You can even hear in David's voice how he's reconsidering his views.
Although, I guess, it would be very convenient. But I just never did get into that. You know, I don't know why.
So despite the high rates at which Latinos use mobile technology, some are still underestimating what that technology that's right there in their hands is capable of. Another entrepreneur, like Idricio, who knows what technology is capable of, is Sara Inés Calderón. She's developing a mobile application called Electa. It aims to make the process of casting the ballot easier for Latinos by providing useful information that's particular to them, like what ID is the best ID to bring to the polls. Recently, Electa was named a finalist for the Voto Latino Innovators Challenge. Sara gave us some words of wisdom or sabiduría.
I would say that if we had a more inclusive tech sector, we would have more innovative products. I would really like it if I could have a bilingual texting functionality on my phone, because sometimes I mean Spanish and sometimes I mean English, and this is 2015, and I know that we have the technology available to make that distinction. There's just nobody in the room to tell the people building that technology that that's something that's a necessity for people. I think that there are lots of Latinos doing a bunch of innovative things, but they're not the ones who are getting the VC funding. They're not the ones who are being profiled in, you know, Fortune magazine. So you're not going to hear about them. And so I think that while, yes, there is a dearth of Latino engineers in our major Fortune 500 companies and whatever, there's also a bunch of people who are out there doing it on their own because the system's not lending itself to enabling them to be successful within that system. So they kind of do things their own way. Electa is a mobile-first application that we're building to help campaigns, candidates, and nonprofits or other organizations engage Latino voters. I'll speak in Texas. I think those voter ID laws tend to disenfranchise particular groups of voters. You're talking about Latinos, people who are in college, for example, or the elderly who may or may not have a quote-unquote valid ID as described by this law. Electa's voter ID information is meant to kind of give people a heads up. We want to be able to allow these types of push notifications that might remind somebody, hey, if you don't have your ID, you have 3 months to get it, or you have 2 months to get it, or here's the link. Latinos started using mobile in innovative ways. A mobile phone is a better tool for somebody who might have a bigger family or might have a more modest budget than buying a desktop or buying a laptop and also paying for that internet connection. What we've seen over time is that Latinos tend to use mobile in ways that weren't really originally planned. Very recently, I had to go online and renew my vehicle registration with the state of Texas. So my name is Sara Inés Calderón. There's an accent on the E and Calderón has an accent on the O. And the state of Texas website came back at me with an error message that said, the following entries have special characters that need to be changed. And so I think that something as simple as allowing people to spell their names correctly on a form, and also allowing people to engage with government. Basically, if any website is going to be as easily accessible on mobile as it is on a desktop, that's something that'll be super helpful to Latinos.
So, Maria, I've learned way more than I ever thought I'd learn about phones doing this reporting.
Was there something that stuck out in all of this talking that you did about this issue?
You know, Maria, I talked to Dr. Ricardo Munoz, and he said something that I really think gets to the heart of why phones are so important to the Latino community.
I grew up in this small city in Peru, and I would sing Mexican corridos and Argentinian tangos and all this music from countries very far away from where I grew up. And then when TV came, you know, I was Gene Autry and my brother was Roy Rogers. We were aware of things that were happening very far away from our small city, which was in the foothills of the Andes, through technology.
Latinos, both in Latin America and here in the U.S., are very aware that there are things going on beyond their national borders. And to know about those things, you need technology. So it's no wonder Latinos are such big smartphone users.
You know, it's funny because when you think of your stereotypical, you know, tech lover, who that person is, you might think of like a geeky white guy.
But no. Yeah, right. But to me, it's a very exciting thought that because tech and phones are so popular and intuitive to Latinos, the technology really could be used in more ways that would improve their lives.
So you're basically saying, look, this is just the beginning of this conversation about Latinos and tech and phones.
Yeah, smartphones are going to turn all Latinos into superhumans. Okay, I mean, maybe not, but like, think about the possibilities.
This was a great hour, Antonia. Thank you so much.
I'm so happy we did it. Thanks, Maria. ¿Dónde está la joya, joya, joya? Y la fortaleza natural. ¿Dónde está ese brillo que le entrega a todo el que la quiere mirar?
And that's it for this week of Latino USA. Our show was produced by Antonia Cerejido, AC Valdez, Lita Hartman, Daisy Rosario, Marlon Bishop, Michael Simon Johnson, and Camilo Vargas. Our engineer is Cornelius McMoyler. Nadia Raymond is our music consultant. Our intern is Laura Calzada. Nancy Trujillo makes it all happen. And this week, special thanks to the great Graham Griffith. Our show was founded at the University of Texas at Austin. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again next week. And in the meantime, come on now, use your phones or whatever to find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. And I gotta be honest, after hearing how many Instagram followers a middle schooler's got on our show, it would be really cool if you would follow me on Instagram. I'm at Maria_La_Hinojosa. Hasta la próxima.
Latino USA is made possible in part by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation and by the Marguerite Casey Foundation, dedicated to achieving a more just and equitable society for all. The Ford Foundation, dedicated to working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide. And the Carnegie Corporation of New York, supporting innovations in education, democratic engagement, and the strengthening of international peace and security at carnegie.org. Funding for Latino USA's coverage of a culture of health is made possible in part by a grant from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. And Latino USA's tech coverage is supported by the KPOR Center for Social Impact, which leverages technology for positive, progressive change. Tech for good, good for tech. KPOR Center.org. And the California Endowment,
building a strong state by improving the health of all Californians.
So I'm going to read the shit out of this script.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Jane and Michael Horvitz, supporting NPR and 90.3 WCPN Idea Stream in Cleveland, dedicated to building a more informed community together by producing in-depth journalism that informs, engages, and inspires. And Emily and Antoine Van Ochtmail, supporting New Futures, which works to help low-income D.C. area youth graduate from community college or certificate programs and become financially self-sufficient. Information is available at newfuturesdc.org. This is NPR.